From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton-Howe joins us, followed, of course, by Conversations with Linda, your phone calls. Here's what's happening. The confidence Americans feel in the economy fell for the second month in a row and touched the lowest level since last summer, perhaps a sign that, well, worries about 9.5-year-old U.S. expansion have spread from Wall Street to Main Street, and it's starting to show. Consumer confidence dropping. The Dow closes more than 250 points higher today in a wild session, erasing a 600-point drop, then it zoomed way, way up. Sears may be down to its last 24 hours, they say. The iconic retailer likely liquidates if no bids come in tomorrow to save the company. Scientists have discovered a breakthrough treatment to fight cancer, so they claim the disease will no longer be deadly for future generations. Researchers at the Francis Crick Institute in London believe it's possible to strengthen the body's defenses by transplanting immune cells from strangers in the body. Interesting. Well, through mid-December, San Diego County recorded 730 salmonella cases, the highest total observed in at least 25 years. The number comes amid a large number of salmonella-related recalls this year that have ranged from Cap'n Crunch cereal and Duncan Hines cake mix to Goldfish crackers and hamburger meat. Let's check in, of course, with pharmacist Ben Fuchs. Ben, why so much salmonella in San Diego? What's going on down there?
I think it has something to do with what I was reading in the article that showed up in the San Diego Union Tribune. It has something to do with cheeses coming in from Tijuana.
Uh-huh.
But I think it has a lot more to do with people's suppressed immune systems and nutritional deficiencies.
That sure doesn't help, does it?
That's right. That's the most important thing you could do to protect yourself from diseases like salmonella or E. coli. And by the way, 95% of cases of salmonella aren't even diagnosed. But the best thing you could do is get yourself on a good digestive nutritional supplement program.
Well, absolutely. Thank you, Ben. Pharmacist Ben Fuchs, who, of course, appears regularly on our program as we talk about criticalhealthnews.com. And he's in tonight for Jeff Nelkin, our food safety coach, who suffered a heart attack. Jeff is okay. Your prayers will be welcome. But it happened yesterday, and we keep our prayers going for our food safety coach, Jeff Nelkin. The spacecraft team that brought us the close-ups of Pluto will ring in the new year by exploring an even more distant and mysterious world. The NASA New Horizons spacecraft will zip past the scrawny object nicknamed Ultima Thule soon after the stroke of midnight. A billion miles beyond Pluto and an astounding 4 billion miles from planet Earth. That's exciting. What else is exciting? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you have for us?
Well, good evening, George. I wish somebody would get the word out to these spacecraft that are visiting our planet, apparently, that things slow down over the Christmas holiday, but that doesn't appear to have been the case. You probably recall I signed off last week with a comment that I didn't get all the reports addressed.
Yes.
That I wanted to. I just bit off too much to handle, I guess. But to start off, I'd like to address briefly those two reports that I left dangling. One is from Graniteville, Vermont. I don't think I squeezed this one in last week. Two adult witnesses were standing outside in Graniteville, which is just southeast of Montpelier, the capital of Vermont. And they saw two white lights below overcast skies. They captured their attention, and while they were looking at them, the two lights suddenly blinked to red and suddenly started accelerating and disappeared over the eastern horizon in a matter of seconds. Far, far too fast for them to have been any kind of sky lantern or so-called Chinese lantern. They saw them for a total of about 20 seconds, they estimate. Well, later that night, that was on the 19th of December, by the way, Wednesday night of last week. Later that night at 9:30 p.m. in Esteline, Texas, four adult witnesses witnessed 17, they counted them, George, 17 small white lights. First they saw three, then they saw five, then they saw seven, and finally two, making 17 of them, moving to the northwest as the clouds moved from north to south. They were in unwavering formation and just moved across the sky very rapidly. They saw them for a total of about 10 minutes, but once they started moving, they just disappeared from sight, reportedly, very quickly. 2 days later, now in New Denver, British Columbia, up in Canada, this is straight north of Spokane, two gentlemen were out walking at night, and they were looking to the west over Valhalla National Park. They saw a red donut-shaped object hovering over extremely rugged territory. The only way you can get there, they say, is by boat or by helicopter. And the object dropped down below their effective horizon to the west. Have no idea what that object was, but we're getting reports of that type of sighting all the time. Next report comes from Christmas Eve, the 24th, at 11:24 p.m. in Seymour, Woodbridge, Connecticut.
Sure it wasn't Santa, Peter?
It could have been. It could have been Rudolph. You never know. But they saw four extremely bright red-orange spheres. I've probably reported that type of sighting too often, but they commented that one sphere would move ahead of the others, and then the rest would catch up to it very abruptly, probably ruling out any kind of, again, sky lantern or so-called Chinese lantern. Next report comes from Christmas Day morning, 6:18 in the morning. A gentleman in Saugus, Massachusetts, was out with his binoculars waiting for the International Space Station to come over. He spotted it. He raised his binoculars just in time to see a craft, a discrete craft that looked something, I gather, like a pumpkin seed in shape, streak across the field of view of his binoculars and disappear suddenly over the horizon, or certainly out of the field of view of his binoculars. And the last two reports come from Maryland. First one was last night at 10:30 p.m., two adult witnesses, actually one adult, one daughter, saw a round, yellow, pinkish-colored UFO in the distant sky. And I mention that because at the same time in a different part of Maryland, I don't know the town yet, we haven't received a written report, a woman and her husband, both of them highly educated, saw a large triangular craft hovering over a nearby forest. It was huge, and it scared the daylights out of them. So the phenomenon is continuing, George, holiday or not, and probably be the same next week.
You got it. Have a great new year, and we'll talk to you next Friday, Peter. Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, Greg Hunter joins us, USAWatchdog.com. We're going to talk about a lot of breaking stories, including our planned pullout in Syria, what's happening with dropping oil prices, and, of course, is Sears ready to go under? Let's get Greg's reaction to that, and then later on this hour, we'll take your phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Greg Hunter has nearly 9 years network experience as an investigative correspondent working for ABC News and Good Morning America for years as well. Most recently, Greg worked for CNN, so does the Paula Zahn Show, American Morning, and various CNN business shows. He's a dedicated, hard-hitting reporter, heads up USAWatchdog.com. And we're going to talk about a number of issues that are facing all of us here as Americans and Canadians. Greg, welcome back, my friend.
Good to be here, George. How you doing?
Good. So let me get your reaction to consumer confidence. They said dropped again for the second month. They're saying that if Sears doesn't get a buyout by tomorrow morning, it's going to go belly up. What the heck's happening to these giants? Is the Internet, Amazon, are they the ones crushing all these other retail stores?
I think that's part of it because Amazon had a good year. Christmas was pretty big. But, you know, Sears is a – I love Sears, too. I hate this. Sears is a dinosaur, and it just hasn't been able to, compete. And we have a Sears here that gave up, half its space to Whole Foods, and you drive by there, and I'm thinking, wow, they're not going to make it very long. They're really not going to. There's hardly any cars in the parking lot. So, I just think it's a sign of the times. A lot of people are going digital. A lot of people are going, Amazon Prime, and even, Walmart has its own type of Amazon Prime type thing that they're doing. So that's just what that is. But the one thing it doesn't signal growth. That's for sure. But
right.
Retail's in trouble. Retail's in bigger trouble than anybody would think.
Right. I think Home Depot and Lowe's probably put the nail in Sears' coffin, too.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of competition.
Yeah. Sears used to be the place to go for automotive repairs, appliances, tools, and all that. And it's just not the same anymore.
I think Lowe's bought the Craftsman name for tools.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And Sears owned most of their real estate. What are we going to do with a glut of all those stores? They'll be empty.
That's the plight of retail. There's a lot of retail in trouble, and it's been in trouble all this year. Probably if we wouldn't have had Donald Trump be elected in 2016, we would have been in a full-blown depression. And the reason why is because we grew all this debt. And what Trump did was like bring blood to the center of the body by all these stock buybacks. Another huge thing he got through was this, drilling oil in Anwar. I'm surprised the tree huggers didn't go crazy on that. But it's hard to have your currency go to zero if you had a huge growth in oil production. There are reports out there saying we're going to be a net oil exporter, that we're going to be the number one producer of oil. There's people that refute that. But one thing they don't refute, we had a huge growth in oil production here in America.
That's true. Now, oil prices have been dropping. They bounced up a little bit over the last day and a half. But overall, they are way down. What's the cause of that?
I think the global economy is slowing down. I think debt service is huge. I think the two big problems in the world right now, the two huge problems are enormous debt and enormous fraud. Let's start with the debt. Enormous debt. We were $165 trillion global debt before 2008. We had a debt crisis. We had a credit seizure. And what do we do in the last 10 years? We grew the debt to $250 trillion globally. So we had a debt problem, and we got the gold cards out, we got the platinum cards out, and we charged everything up. And I think we're running up against the end of what we can even pay, even though rates are low. And, you don't need a big rate increase. And Peter Schiff says that the rate increase in September was the one that, popped the bubble. But you don't need a big rate increase if you have that kind of debt explosion. And then you have the ECB, the European Central Bank, is going to stop buying bonds. And, you got big trouble. The other side is fraud. And fraud is just off the charts everywhere you look. It's fraud in the economy. It's China's going to take over Kenya's largest port because of unpaid loan. That's not fraud. That's more the debt issue. Everything is fake. You had, Reddit CEO, former Reddit CEO, Elaine Pao, say that all the metrics for a lot of the big companies, for what they say their eyeballs are, what they're selling, are fake. You had the $21 trillion that they don't really know what happened in DOD, Department of Defense, and also the Housing and Urban Development. This is Dr. Mark Skidmore, Michigan State University, with a team of people using OIG reports. It's $21 trillion of missing money is what he calls it. And I don't know if we'll ever find out what happened to it. These were Inspector General reports. They've scrubbed them off the Internet, and they made it a national security issue.
Let's get your take on what's going on in Syria, Greg. Then we'll come back and talk about the markets as well. President Trump says he's pulling out 2,000 troops out of Syria, which is the troop strength we've got, the ground troops at least, wants to pull them out. There's been some kind of controversy. Some people are saying we need to keep them in there to keep the Middle East stable. I was a little surprised at that. I'm not so sure we should even be in Syria. What's your take?
He's never been a fan of that. He wanted to get out over a year ago, and shazam, we had a false flag or an attack, and then he had the missile attack. And he's never been a fan of Syria, and he likes results, not, to keep doing this forever and ever. We got a lot of debt, and I think he's looking at this as a way to save money, and maybe he'll bring the troops home, and maybe they're expecting some sort of civil unrest. I don't know. We do have, you know, pretty much an open southern border, which the mainstream media doesn't like to tell you about, but they've called, you know, the child trafficking, the human trafficking on our southern border is massive. And it's probably worse than drugs, as I was explained to me by a former CIA official. Say, well, you know, if you do a line of coke, that coke's gone. But if you have it, you know, an 8-year-old kid, you can pass them around for years before you harvest their organs or whatever dreadful stuff they do to these people. So, I think 80% of Americans, and I'm part of that percentage, we're not invited in Syria. We are not there by treaty. We are in Syria, and, you know, we should, you know, Trump did say we're going to pull it back to Iraq. We're still in Iraq, but we're invited to Iraq. We're good with Iraq.
I think they want us out now, though, don't they? They're talking
Syria,
about it.
Syria wants us out.
Iraq wants us out.
They're not happy, you know, with that either, but I don't know if they'll fall. I don't know what the strategic importance is, but I'd not do it.
But we went into Iraq, Greg, under a lie. They lied to us.
Well, yeah, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Here we are. How many years later is that?
15. We went in there in 2003, the second time. So
it's, you know, we have a, I think Trump is a very pragmatic person, and I think he's, you know, looking at the money, and he wants to cut budgets, and he wants to cut things. He doesn't want to cut the military, but he can save money there. And there's a lot of people whose lives are, you know, in harm's way in that area. Also, you got a bizarre phone call. This happened pretty fast after him and Erdogan talked on the phone. And I don't know if he was threatened. Some people say he was blackmailed. I don't really believe that. I think maybe Erdogan said, hey, listen, if you'd like to have your airbase up here, you'll leave Iraq because we don't like the people that are down there. We want to, the Kurds, we think they're terrorists. So I don't know how that's going to work after we leave. Now Russia's telling Turkey, don't invade Syria. We don't want you in here either. You know, Turkey still is a NATO member.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it
sounds like a reluctant one.
And I think Trump just said, you know, this is going to get freaky, and maybe I just need to back out. It's only 2,000 troops, and they can still, you know, come in from Iraq. If they aren't leaving Iraq, I don't think anytime soon, they can still come from there. They're still going to, you know, possibly fly air missions into Syria. I don't know exactly how it's going to go, but the troops are going to go out. Also, it also puts a lot of tension and pressure on Israel. It's been reported that they may hit there's 10 military bases the Iranians have in Syria. And so that's been a point of contention. This may turn, you know, morph into a war with we're killing off ISIS, which we've severely curtailed their caliphate. And then it may turn into a war where, you know, Iran has their supreme leader has written books about how to wipe them out. So, you know, that's a hot spot. That could be a hot spot, and it could be something that you need to keep an eye on.
Well, do you think the president popping up in Iraq to visit the troops, it was a display of our commitment to stay in Iraq?
I don't know if it's our commitment to stay. I think it's his commitment to support our troops, and he took them out of harm's way. And I think that's the way. If you talk to the guys over here leaving, they're not probably sad they're going to be taken out of harm's way.
Well, no, of course not.
Not that they're wussies or anything, but, you know, if you have the chance to, what are we doing here? And, you know, we can pull back and let things kind of settle out and shake out because now it looks like the Turks and the Russians may mix it up if Turkey decides to invade Syria and go after the Kurds. I don't know. He's definitely going to save some money by moving these guys out, and I just don't know all the metrics behind the scenes. I just don't know that. I think the media is pretty stupid on the front page of Drudge. Donald Trump all alone. Really? I mean, they took the bait, hook, line, and sinker, and, oh, he's all by himself. He's flying to Iraq to be with the troops. I mean, these people are stupid, which is part of the fraud, incidentally. I just wanted to tell you that. The media is part of the fraud.
Intentional fraud or stupid fraud?
No, intentional fraud. I mean, we just had, and I just want to give this as an example, and I'm not a Democrat or a Republican, but I just want to give you this. We just had two guys testify in Tom Fitton at Judicial Watch, testify under oath in front of a congressional committee about the Clinton Foundation.
Right.
Now, 2 years ago, a guy by the name of Robert Ortel came on my show, and I made him send me the paperwork. I was freaking out about this, and he said, hey, you know, the Clinton Foundation was only an archival library in Little Rock, and anything beyond that library, they never did the paperwork to make that a charity. What? Say what? And so all this money that the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, you know, like collecting money for the dreadful earthquake that happened in Haiti, all the money that for this AIDS thing in Africa, and all their money fraud, it's not a charity.
We're going to come back with you, Greg, in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, and let's take phone calls next. Well, next hour, of course, Linda Bolton Howe, our investigative reporter, joins us with stories of high strangeness, and then we'll wrap up the show with an hour of conversations with Linda, your phone calls. But when we come back in a moment with Greg Hunter, we'll also take your calls as we talk about these world events. Two live stage shows coming up, at least two coming up next year. I know there are more on the table, but we'll talk about that later. Our first one is Saturday, March 23rd. At Everett, Washington, produced by executive producer for the programs, Tom Danheiser.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We are coming back to Everett, Washington on Saturday, March 23rd. I just got a call the other day, and our wonderful Bob of the Sea Crane Company is going to come. So,
oh, great.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of
fun. To see
him. It is, like I said, Saturday, March 23rd. We're going
to get him to give out a radio to somebody.
You know what? We could do that. We could do that. Yeah. So we're going to have four guests, four separate interviews. We're going to start off with the director of the UFO Reporting Agency, whom we just heard, Mr. Peter Davenport. We're going to learn a little bit about hidden symbolism from esoteric researcher Johnny Enoch. The next interview will be with Danion Brinkley. Everybody knows Danion. We'll learn about the afterlife. And we're going to end the night with rogue scholar John Hoag. So it's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be a live band, audience participation. We'll set up some microphones. People can walk up, ask any questions they want. And, of course, after the show, we're going to do a meet and greet, and we will stay till we talk to everybody, say hi. So it's going to be a ton of fun. And to get tickets, you can call 425-258-6766. That's 425-258-6766. Or, George, of course, we can go to the Coast to Coast AM website in the events section.
Absolutely. It's a big theater, folks, but the tickets are really going fast. Thanks, Tom. And then, of course, our second show of 2019 will be Saturday, May 11th, the day before Mother's Day. Bring Mom out and have a great time at the Lincoln Theater in Columbus, Ohio. We're looking forward to that. Again, that's May 11th. Remember the date when you go to the ticket section. Again, the same as Everett Events or the Carousel Reel. You click those, it'll take you straight to the link and you can get your tickets. This is a smaller theater. It's not as big as Everett. So these tickets are really going fast, so don't get left out. You can also call their ticket center. It's the Kappa Ticket Center at 614-469-0939. 614-469-0939. Back with Greg Hunter and your calls next on Coast to Coast AM. And we're back with our final segment with Greg Hunter. We'll take your calls as well as we talk about world events, market volatility, and so many other incredible stories. Greg, if you had to single out one story to really watch in 2019, what would it be?
Deutsche Bank stock for stocks. Deutsche Bank is under $8 a share. It was $19 a share a year ago. It's now $7 something. If it keeps falling, Deutsche Bank makes Lehman Brothers look like a kiosk. It's a huge mega bank, and you know, Lehman Brothers is largely credited in the last credit balloon for taking down the global system. On the other side, it's all the fraud and crime that had happened with this this failed coup that happened in our government, and I think there's going to be big prices to pay for the people that try to knock President Trump with a phony, duck him out of office, with a phony dossier paid for by the Democrats. I think that's going to be a huge story. I just wanted to finish one thought about the Clinton Foundation and the press.
Okay.
The press, so they have this thing where they find out the Clinton Foundation, beyond the library, was a fraud. This is hundreds of billions or a couple of billion dollars. Nobody in the Democrat Party mentioned a word about it. I thought the Clintons, you know, were doing good work for the people in Haiti. They were ripping them off in a time of need. Nobody on the Republican side said a word. This was a huge revelation. What, you mean for more than 10 years, the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, that's totally fraud, not a charity? Nobody in the mainstream media, including Fox, did this story. That's what I'm talking about. Why people don't know what's going on.
Jerry Corsi did.
I understand. understand. He's a good man. He's suing. They tried to get him to lie, and I think the Mueller team bit off more than they could chew on him. But this is a huge revelation, and this is what tells me our media—not you, George—our media is completely fraudulent. I mean, the Washington Post did a story about this $21 trillion, and that Dr. Skidmore. He called me later and went, "Man, they lied. I didn't say any of that stuff. It didn't cancel each other out. This is a huge fraud." And let me tell you, that affects every American. That's an unbelievable amount of money that went through the Department of Defense, right? And if you just look at the student loan thing, and this is why this is such a big problem, the debt. $1.5 trillion in student debt. There's 145 million taxpayers. But that's $10,000 for every taxpayer in America to pay for this. Now, you amplify the debt. It's unbelievable, frightening amount of debt that's unfathomable. I mean, I had Egon von Greyers on who said if you add up all the derivatives and all the debt, I mean, it's $2,000 trillion. And they just had a story out on the Guardian UK that talked about how it was Ambrose Evans Pritchard, who's a real hitter, real guy, financial guy, talking about how the Bank of International Settlements is worried about derivatives and a credit seizure, and the derivatives are far worse than they were before, and they're worried about their being, quote, vulnerable to failure, could cause a destabilizing feedback loop, and BIS fears a waterfall effect. Well, this came out, and what do we have next month? We have the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. What else? Who else is in Switzerland? The Bank of International Settlements, the Central Bank of Central Bankers, leaking out, putting out this
story
with quotes. There's something big coming down the pipe, George.
Let's go to the phones for you now, Greg. They're lining up for you. Let's go to Cindy in Mount Gilead, Ohio, to get us started. Hi, Cindy.
Hi. Oh, what a great show. Thank you so much, Greg.
You're very welcome.
So I kind of missed some of what you were saying. I was on the talking to your screener, who's amazing. And anyway, so I've been following, and I'm a big fan of Charity Navigator. And so they broke the story that the Clinton Foundation was keeping 85% and only giving 15% to charity. And so it's my understanding that while Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, she diverted taxpayer funds earmarked for Haiti to the Clinton Foundation, and there was footage that we never saw. You had to go on YouTube of Haiti rioting because these people in Haiti knew she was doing this.
Oh God,
they were rioting in front of the Clinton Foundation. Love to see some of that footage on mainstream media. But as Secretary of State, she diverted funds to the Clinton Foundation, and they kept 85% of our taxpayer dollars. Did any money ever get to Haiti? Do you know anything about this?
This is coming to me from
an FBI agent.
But it's hard to figure out how much they collected, but it's between $1 billion and $4 billion.
Collected.
Yes, collected. And now remember, let's let this sink in. The Clinton Foundation is not a charity. Only an archival library in Little Rock, that's all they ever filled out the paperwork for. The Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, not a charity. This was under testimony in Congress a few weeks ago, and also confirmed by Ortel a couple of years ago, but this is not a charity. They collected money, and they weren't a charity. That's a total fraud. And the media is not even reporting on it. And you don't see anybody on the Republican side of the aisle standing up there. We should stop this. That's outrageous. Nobody says a word. And I think it's because there's probably a government component, maybe a CIA, and I'm getting out here on a limb now, and I don't know this for a fact, but there's something so stinky wrong about this that nobody in Washington will say a peep about it means there's got to be something deeper going on, but it is not a charity. That's not what I think. That's a statement of fact. And the press won't cover it. The Democrats won't say anything. I mean, the Clintons were supposed to love black people. Well, not in Haiti. And the Haitians hate them. They used to have demonstrations up by Bill Clinton's office that the press would not even cover up there. Oh, anyway.
So where's the money, Gregory?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? Where is the money? Where is the money? I mean, you know, was the Clinton Foundation funding all kinds of special ops projects? Was it funding the Democrats? I mean, the Democrats got into such a problem in the 2016-11 election that that Donna Brazile in her book said Clinton bought it for $20 million, took it over while she was running for president. So, I mean, that's just an outrageous story, and you don't hear about it in the press, which makes the press, you know, awful. I mean, they shouldn't be Democrat or Republican. I mean, that's a huge story. Come on. The Clinton Foundation's not a charity. I mean, I remember it being at ABC when George Stephanopoulos was just starting out there in 2004, you know, sending me emails to, hey, we want you to come down here and donate money and be in Washington for a fundraiser, a dinner. And this is a guy anchoring the news at ABC, and he's shilling for the Clinton Foundation, which is not a charity.
Let's go to Jack in San Diego, California. Take it away, Jack.
All right, thank you. First of all, the coup against the president is still in progress. Deutsche Bank is being investigated for money laundering. And I have two questions for your guest.
Sure.
If you could comment, number one, on why the 10-year Treasury yield is going down at the same time the Fed is raising interest rates. And my second question is, does he see high-frequency trading as a bigger problem than the Fed raising rates?
Explain what high-frequency trading is, Jack, for everybody, if you can.
Okay. High-frequency trading, and it represents about 80% of the daily volume, is simply computers without any human input with programs based on algorithms trading stock. And it's more gambling than investing. In other words, they can buy a position and 1 minute later sell it.
Ah, okay. Take that one first, Greg.
They can buy a million positions and sell it and direct the market. It's a high-tech form of front-running trades, but I don't think it's the biggest problem. I think the biggest problem is the pool of slush and slop that's floating around in the stock market. And according to Captain Austin Fitz, 10 to 15, I don't know, a bunch of companies that have terrible accounting. They're zombie companies. The accounting in a lot of the companies, not all of them, but a lot of them, are totally fraudulent. The 10-year yield, well, let's talk about the $21 trillion that they can't find and now is a national security issue at DOD and HUD and with the government. The government's budgets are now, I kid you not, a national security issue, okay? You're never going to find that out, okay? So nobody could figure out why this is the longest bull market in history and how they kept this thing going, how they kept the yields going down, who's buying our bonds, and how they – and I was talking to Rob Kirby at Kirby Analytics, and he's an expert and buys tonnage of gold for people. He's a macroeconomic analyst and a derivatives trader. He's got a big, you know, a CV. And he said, you know, nobody could figure out how they kept this going. Well, now we know how they did it. They printed an enormous amount of money, and they siloed it, and they're buying everything. We have a space program. They're buying the bonds. They're buying the stocks. You know, who is buying our debt? The Chinese aren't. The Japanese aren't. The Europeans aren't. Nobody's buying our debt. This is why we're really close to the end. So why is the 10-year yield going down? Because we're buying it. Now, are there some people going into it as a, quote, flight to safety? Sure, yes, but I think some of that is where did they get the money to buy all this debt? And the Exchange Stabilization Fund is probably a good, culprit in doing that. I mean, we just had the Saturday or Sunday before Christmas, Mnuchin, who's the Treasury Secretary, who runs the Exchange Stabilization Fund, you know, get together the President's Working Group on Financial Markets, a.k.a. the Plunge Protection Team. And this is an environment where everything's going great. Everything's super. And he's getting ready, and he's calling up the Plunge Protection Team, which is the CFTC, the SEC, the Fed, and the Treasury, and Mnuchin runs it. He also runs the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Where are they getting all that money? Where are they getting the money to buy all these bonds? And this is why every man, woman, and child in America should be really worried about our financial position. Maybe that's why he's bringing Trump's cutting expenses where he can. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to get involved in a big war and balloon the deficit. I don't know. But the 10-year Treasury yield is going down. Somebody's buying the bonds. People like Rob Kirby thinks it's the exchange stabilization fund in part, and I don't think it's the front running of trades. Although I think that's pure evil, and I think it is logarithmic trading is pure evil. You look people down on the floor of the stock market, and it's like, what are you doing there? They're not trading. You ought to be in front of a bank of computers, servers. But I think it's the debt. The debt is a huge problem. It's a monster problem. Most people can't even get their heads around it. I mean, $2 quadrillion if you counted all the derivatives, the government debts, the debts, and this is why people are going crazy. I mean, they're wanting to raise their taxes. They want to pay for things like in France with the yellow vest thing or how Trump got elected. I mean, I think there's a whole underlying simmering boiling a pot, and I think what blows it up is the debt.
Let's go to Chris in Clearwater, Florida. Hi, Chris. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, I'd like to hear what you have to say about whether the public employees' pension funds are being invested in hedge funds. Are those, as I've heard, are those nearly worthless or of undetermined value and not regulated by the Security and Exchange Commission?
I'll tell you what I think. Catherine Austin Fitz has said in the past: they took real money that was put in there, deposited in there, and then they took the real money out and they used it for all kinds of other projects and all kinds of other things, and then they put in a treasury bonds in there, which are IOUs. So the bonds are only as good as the currency and the ability of the country to pay them back. If you look at 2005, you can Google this and look at Greenspan talking to Congress, and they're talking about Social Security, and this is just really what we're talking about here. And he said, listen, we can guarantee the nominal value of anything, but we can't guarantee the buying power. Oh, hey, you have you get $30,000 a year for a pension? No problem. Here's your money, and a loaf of bread is $250.
Simple as that.
About. Or we're going to have a total, we're going to go the other way, and that's going to be just massive. It would be better if they just said, hey, listen, we can't really pay the money we said we could pay you. We just can't. We can't wring this much money out of taxpayers. And so your $30,000 is going to be $10,000. I don't know how, or maybe they'll do some of both. I don't know. But people should be, this is why the gold community, if you look at the gold community, the hard ass, I don't sell anything either. I don't have anything to sell. And you look at people like Egon von Greyers, who vaults gold on two continents at Matterhorn Asset Management, and he says, listen, there's only about a percent of the people that have gold, and we all know how this ends. We don't care when – we weren't excited when it was 1900 an ounce, and we weren't upset that it was 1100 an ounce. We know how this ends, and how this ends is ugly. It ends like Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is the canary in the coal mine. They thought they were pretty cute in 2016 by paying all their executives, which I think the poor people in Puerto Rico are good people. They had terrible management and I think fraudulent management in Puerto Rico. They have already got a bonus. I think they paid out $125 million for everybody in the territory of Puerto Rico. The following year, they defaulted. Oh, and then they had a hurricane, and then the power was off for 9 months.
And look what happened to that. Greg, we got to do this again another time as well. Thank you so much. Up next, investigative reporter Linda Moulton-Howe. Wait till you hear what kind of stories she has.